Flux capacitor is flexing. Yes, we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in again to the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and today we're talking about superhero RPGs, kind of the focus of this podcast, and we are graced to have a couple of friends of the podcast, often guests. First is Christopher McLaughlin of Green Ronin fame. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm great. How are you, sir?
Well, good, good. Glad to have you, as always.
Thank you.
And right next to Chris on my little Google Hangout board is Steve Kenson. How you doing, Steve?
I am doing as well as the impending convention season will allow.
are you filled with dread or excitement or some kind of mixture of the both?
Yeah, it's usually a mixture of the two. So, you know, a combination of impending deadlines and things that must be done and looking forward to seeing people and having a good time and playing some games and running some games, that sort of thing.
You actually get time to play games when you're at cons? That is awesome.
I usually get more time to run games when I'm at cons, but I'm actually hoping to play some. We'll see.
Okay. Well, cool. Hope that works out. And last but not least, we've got Jim Seals, who was actually here in the last podcast talking about Star Trek movies with Jason Chandro. So this is your second time on the podcast.
Yes, I'm. You know, you let me in the studio, and I just haven't left.
So, well, welcome to our palatial Banff podcast studio. Come back on Tuesdays. It's Taco Tuesdays down in the cafeteria.
Excellent. I like tacos.
Who doesn't like tacos? Bolsheviks, that's who. So let's talk. First thing I got on my list of things to talk about is Hero High. This is the update to the second edition Mutants and Mastermind book focused on teen heroes, and this is coming out. I know we probably don't want to give a firm date, do we, guys?
Well, it is basically going to be in pre-order any time now. We're just finishing up the final touches with production. So I suspect that it will be available for folks to pre-order the print edition and get the PDF right away anytime now. You know, the print edition obviously will be a few weeks out from that as the printer turns it around, but its release is imminent.
Okay, well, that's good news. So hopefully sometime before the beginning of August. Can we say that? Is that loose enough?
I would say so, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, you heard it here first. You heard it here first, folks. Hero High, coming soon.
It's like that moment in the monster movie where, you know, you start to see the bolts holding the chains and the walls start to come free a little bit.
Well, it's actually up on the Green Ronin. I was just at the store today, and it's actually available for pre-order right now.
Oh, we'll see. And
there you go.
You guy knows more about our book than we do.
This is why you're here, Jim. You're on top of stuff.
Right? Yeah, no, I did the research and took some notes and so I can have coaching questions.
Well, hey, can I take off and you can just host? Because I got things to do, man.
please don't.
Oh, no, that's
so. You know, what you also heard here first is that Hero High apparently is available for pre-order, so even better.
Yeah, I had no idea. So is that the Mutants and Masterminds page where you see that, or where exactly is that?
It's at the main store. It was at the very bottom with some very nice artwork on that cover.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big fan of that cover.
It's a great cover.
All right, so I'm at mutantsmasterminds.com. I'm getting on the shop. I'm going to greenroninstore.com. I'm attempting to verify this information.
You have to get a full confirmation.
Revised edition, PDF, coming soon. All right, so you can pre-order it. It looks like you're not downloading the PDF just yet.
Yeah, but quite soon.
You'll be offered the PDF version for just $5 during checkout.
Correct.
I'm going to have to order this and find out, aren't I? All right, I'll do that as the podcast goes on. But yeah, go to greenroninstore.com. There's a beautiful picture. Who did your art, by the way? Do we know?
You know, I wish I had the name of the cover artist off the top of my head, but I don't.
Oh, holy shit. Oh,
it's
shit.
The studio is called Conceptopolis, but...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a terrific cover, and the whole book has got some terrific art to it, so...
Well, me and some masterminds, you guys are famous for having that kind of art, so
yeah.
Glad to see that tradition. Yeah. Jim, if you're on that page too, is there a place to click to order that? Because I'm not seeing a. I'm just seeing coming soon.
Let's see. Yeah, I think it's just coming soon.
Yeah, I don't think the pre-order's live yet.
Oh, I think I was too excited. Let me see.
Thrill is three guys trying to figure out how to work the internet.
This is the magic of live radio.
Speaking of Hero High, where's a 12-year-old when we need one?
I may have misspoke. It says coming soon on my page.
It's not live yet, but it will be soon.
So close. All right. Well, hey, now that we've run this conversational thread into the ground, let's talk about the creation of this book. And we have two of the four writers here on the podcast with us. Unfortunately, Lucien Solvan could not be here today. He was practicing his acceptance speech for the Emmys. But we have Steve Kenson and Christopher McLaughlin. So, Steve and Chris, tell us about this book. How is it different from the second ed? What are you most excited about? That kind of thing.
Basically, Hero High was one of our most popular second edition source books, largely due to Lucien's, brilliant writing on the book, and the subject matter. So, I mean, it was a hugely popular book, and we knew we wanted to do something with it for the current edition of the game. And because the Earth Prime setting tends to progress in, roughly the same sort of time progression as the real world, it was fairly easy to tackle the notion of updating Hero High, because basically all of the characters from the original edition of the book have long since all graduated high school. In fact, the very youngest of them, we determined while we were sitting down and doing out the timelines and whatnot, the character called Whoop Ant, who is one of my favorites from the previous edition of Hero High, who was barely a freshman in high school, is now old enough to drink. God's help us all. It was a pretty simple matter of saying, hey, we'll just do, all new classes of characters to look at the setting side of things. And because we've expanded the Earth Prime setting quite a bit since the original edition of Hero High came along, it gave us an opportunity to take sort of a wider look at teen heroes and teen villains in the context of the setting, which is sort of where Professor McLaughlin comes in.
Look at that segue. That was a beautiful and graceful segue. Thank you, Steve. We so rarely have those on this show. Steve, Chris, please continue.
Well, I started getting these emails back toward the end of 2014, and honestly, if it hadn't been, names are recognized, I thought that somebody was trying to prank me, because it's like, okay, Lucien's updating Hero High, yay, new edition of my favorite M&M source book, they want me to be a part of it. I thought, no, because the first one is just this is completely and utterly brilliant. I fell in love with that book from the moment that I literally first opened up the first Hero High and found myself in the types of teachers. And I'm like, this reads like something that was written by somebody that spent 30 years in the classroom, and I just stunned by it all. But Lucien is a great writer and an even better human being, and so he spent 3 weeks of cajoling and flattering, and then finally he said, "Be in my book," and I'm like, "Okay." And thankfully, yes, like I said, we've expanded our reality, and best DC Comics tradition, we sort of tore a hole in reality and gave me one to kind of sneak through. Now that we've added Emerald City, we wanted to include a little something like, well, here's a little something for if you want to do a Hero High campaign in Emerald City. So I made up a team of Emerald City villains. For those of you that know Freedom City lore, we have a Shadow Academy, which is kind of like this dark, twisted thing that supervillains have set up to train young supervillains into being adult supervillains. And so we figured that, Emerald City, given its history, would be a great place for something like that to exist. So I did their team and expanded a little bit about the faculty and whatnot.
So now you can do super school rivalries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Makes homecoming a whole new thing.
Yeah. And I tell you, it was an honor to be in a book with Lucien. And but I tell you, it was just it's such a miracle to see this thing out because my computer got hit with ransomware about back in January 2015, mm-hmm. and one of the things I lost was the manuscript, which was 80% done. So I actually had to go back to Word One by Professor Christopher McLaughlin and do the whole thing over again. So. Mm-hmm. Nobody's more glad to see this book out than Lucien, I'm sure, but I'm a very close second.
Indeed. It's important to back up, but
it is indeed that's our knowing is half the battle message for today. Back up.
And it's a lesson that we all know, and we've all had that one experience where we recreate as opposed to create, and it's such a frustrating thing in the modern day.
It is right. Usually a hard-earned lesson.
Yeah. The reason the ransomware caught me with my defenses down, as it were, was I was 5 days away from getting a new computer, so it was kind of the whole he was 3 days away from retirement thing.
Yep. Speaking of technology, one of the other great aspects of the new edition of Hero High is because technology is such a young topic, and there was, in technological terms, practically an epoch between the first edition of Hero High and the new one, we've been able to address the sort of huge explosion of social media and its role in young people's lives as part of the book, whereas it was sort of in its infancy when we were first doing the original edition of Hero High. Now you'll see plenty of a lot of some of the art in the book is actually screen captures from the characters' phones. That show their Instagram accounts and their tweets and their text conversations and all of that sort of thing. And, a lot of the illustrations are actually selfies of the various characters. And we do a whole sidebar section talking about, what's social media mean, if you're a teenager with superpowers and even possibly a secret identity to protect, how do you maintain a secret identity when, Facebook's, facial recognition software keeps trying to tag you? That sort of a thing.
Yeah, that was one of the really amazing things about seeing the second edition because, I've been in the classroom for 22 years, and the biggest adjustment by far has been, one day I woke up and all of a sudden I was teaching little Borg. They're all hooked into this like, cybernetic hive mind. I do a whole day on like third and minor parties in my classes, and I have this favorite like crank fringe political candidate that I love to talk about because his entire campaign is like a 6-page continuously scrolling web page that's in all capitals, and he only refers to himself in the third person. So how could I not talk about this in class? Because they think it's hilarious. And I think 3 or 4 years ago, for the first time ever, I got, oh, yeah, and you should see his Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's now out there in the hive mind. And Lucien has absolutely captured that perfectly. And it makes it a fun and very timely book.
Yeah,
indeed. That's cool. Hey, you guys are reading Squirrel Girl, right?
Fun book.
Yeah, I love the book front to back. One of the things I look forward to every month is her Twitter feed on the first page.
Right.
Did any of you happen to read the 2005 Joe Casey book called The Intimates?
Not familiar.
I did
it
not.
It came out by Wildstorm, and it was a teen hero book, and I think it was the first time that I saw in mainstream modern and superhero book where they incorporated social media with these teen heroes and the various things. Cool. Material. So when you guys start talking about this, it's bringing to mind for me Punchy and that whole crew of misfits.
Very cool.
Yeah, I had never heard of that before. That was okay. Yeah, that was, let's see, a Wildstorm comic, and that was
The Intimate.
Yeah, 2005, like you were said. Yeah, huh.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was a lot of fun, but it's you know, Joe Casey mileage may vary.
Fair enough.
What else does Joe do?
He did a run on Superman that I actually quite enjoy, where he made Superman a pacifist and he didn't punch anyone. Like, he would solve all of his. It was like the anti Zack Snyder book for like 2 years, and he would just talk to people and do Superman things like saving people, but he wouldn't throw a punch. It was kind of glorious.
Mm.
It's basically the Superman from the Super Friends.
Yeah.
And two or three weeks ago, I went to see the Riff Tracks MST3K reunion, and one of the shorts that all the people riffed on was the classic stamp day for Superman with George Reeves and Noel Neal and Jack Larson. And they introduced the short with, for those of you that don't recognize Superman when he's not a soulless killing machine. There for a while in the 50s, he was this kind of doughy guy who just, you know, kind of... So, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I think for his time, you know, George Reeves was in pretty good shape. But, yeah, I mean, things change.
Yeah, but you ever hear the classic Noel Neal story about how they met?
No.
She went on the set the first day, and it was like 9 a.m., and he went up to her, offered to make her a martini, too, and said, "Welcome to the bottom of the barrel."
Yeah.
Damn. All right. Well,
is there anything more 1950s than George Reeves with a martini in his hand at 9 a.m.?
No.
I wait till at least 10 to, you know, break out the,
get the kid off to school and then, you know,
right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's Sunday morning, you know, what's the problem? You know, you wait till after church. Am I wrong here? Am I talking to a bunch of Quakers? What's going on?
Oh gosh!
I am three sheets to the wind with a cup of wine, so martini is a little out of my weight class.
I'm just joking. I hardly ever touch the stuff anymore since I've become a father. But yeah, Bloody Mary's on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know.
Well, sure,
so I tell my wife, we go out for breakfast. I'm like, it's a Bloody Mary. It's okay to have it before noon. And she just looks at me with this icy stare of scorn and disdain. But, oh, well, anyway. So, wow, I didn't realize George Reeves hated that job that much.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that. Did Christopher Reeves like the job?
He liked it less and less as he went on.
Yeah.
You know, they had to give him total script control to get him back for number four. And
really, after three, do you blame him?
Yeah.
I was just about to make that joke.
Three and four were just so bad. It's understandable, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, little do we know, DC was just getting warmed up.
Yeah. Well, you know, in between the bad Superman movies, they did make a pretty good Superman cartoon and a pretty decent JLA cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Unless we forget a pretty good Young Hero cartoon and Young Justice.
Yes, now available on Netflix.
And by law, DC has to get at least one thing right just to keep you hanging on.
Otherwise, it's just not tragic and poetic enough.
To me personally, it's kind of there. Come on back, baby. I can change. It'll never happen again.
Classic abusive relationship.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Chris, how are you enjoying Rebirth?
Well, you know, as we went on at length, I love everything about it except for that epilogue. And
I didn't mean like that one book. I meant the ongoing effort, as long as
I can focus on stuff like the fact that Wally West is back, and you know, they're acknowledging that a lot of what they did with the New 52 was terrible, ill-conceived. That's great. I mean, I'm the demographic they're aiming that in. But you know, every single time I'm reminded, oh, by the way, it's Dr. Manhattan. It's just
Has Zen Daddy-O come over to your house yet and personally apologize and offer to make you some hash browns? Would that help?
I think Alan Moore is the one he needs to apologize to.
Yeah, it's hard to see that conversation happening.
I understand professional rivalries. I mean, you know, I try to love everybody everywhere, and there are still a couple people in the game industry. If they're crossing the street in front of me, I'd probably speed up. You know, but you know, I'm still not going to use a universe line relaunch of one of the greatest modern mythologies just to cash a receipt because somebody trashed my work.
Fair enough. All right, Chris. We've been talking comics for I don't know how many years now because I'm old, but I never knew you were a fan of the young hero genre. I know Steve mentioned it before in the podcast; he's a big fan, but this was actually a surprise to me that you're into that.
Well, to be honest with you, that's part of the reason that I fought Lucian so hard about being a part of the book. You know, you'd be surprised how much 22 years in the classroom really satisfies your appetite for young people and knowing what they're into and what they're about. You know, I am gleefully childless, and I just, you know, I'm like, you know, I mean, I can kind of see where on paper I might be the guy for this book, but temperamentally, my interest in teen heroes honestly has never gotten past the original Bob Haney Teen Titans. And I'm only there for the ironic reason of seeing a white middle-aged guy trying to write hip 60s teenager dialogue. You know, when they're fighting the Mad Mod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me that's a unique comic experience. But you know, like I said, apparently you just don't say no to Lucian, and thank God for it. So what I did was I tried to think of it not so much from teen comics, which admittedly not a strong point for me. I tried to think of it just, well, you know, young people, or at least you ought to by now. So I just sort of came at my part of it from what have you learned about people in that age group? And the main thing that I've learned, and the thing that it was kind of my breakthrough on the project, was the thing about your teen years is that you will make the best and the worst decisions you will ever make in your life. And so I tried to think, well, let's take that and add superpowers. And so that was kind of the
skeleton. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of the skeleton that I built the thing on. And then I just kept putting bits and pieces of a lot of the various students that I've met and gotten to know over the years. Of course, I had to twist them and make them evil, because believe it or not, despite what they tell you, most young people are not evil. Just enough to give the others a bad rep. But, you know, just taking some of their struggles and motivations and things like that and looking at it through that lens of what if you have way more power than you should, way younger than you should. And I came to appreciate how, you know, when you're in your teen years, you're making decisions that you're only really equipped for when you're, I think, you're in your 40s. I mean, these days you're a high school freshman, you're 13 or 14, and they're asking you to pick the job that you're going to do for the next 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll be 48 next year, and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. You know, I mean, I came at it even though they're evil, and believe me, there are some really awful people on the team that I created. Yes. But I did try to come in with that bit of sympathy of, you know, what if I were being, you know, what is it like to be not old enough to drive and being asked to make that vital of decisions.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that, you know, makes teen characters incredibly well suited for the superhero genre is just how huge everything is to those characters.
Yeah.
That really, I think, comes through pretty well in the fictional aspects of the book. How every moment, you know, for these characters is just a giant, enormous decision that is the most important thing in the universe that has ever happened, because there's that, you know, like Chris says, that there's that very limited sense of perspective. So, you know, it's just, you know, oh my God, it's so important. You don't understand. And you know, that I think that really comes through both on the side of the, you know, sort of young heroes in training, and the young, future supervillains of America characters, because on both sides, even though they've kind of chosen a side, there's so much unformed potential,
mm-hmm.
That you could see things kind of going either way. And some of these kids who are going down the wrong path, or basically being influenced by the Shadow Academy, have a chance to kind of pull back from that abyss. And by the same token, some of the characters who are training at the Claremont Academy, some of them are understandably not very happy with life, as teenagers often are. and you could see things going poorly, in the end if they don't get it together. So, it's just such sort of raw potential combined with just the sense of drama that only a gang of teenagers have.
Hey, just out of curiosity, can you give us any kind of updates on some of the teen heroes from Second Ed Hero High?
Yes. We talk a little bit about some of the sort of alumni of Claremont Academy. That gets touched on both in Hero High and also in the upcoming new edition of Freedom City, and a little bit in Atlas of Earth Prime in some spots as well, because those characters have kind of, obviously they've done what people do when they graduate from high school. They've kind of scattered to the winds, and some of them have stuck close to home, and some of them are far away from home. And their lives have taken very different sort of turns in many regards. So, for example, there was a character. There was sort of two distinct groups of characters in the original edition of Hero High, because of a group of interdimensional characters called the Alternateens ended up on Earth Prime and sort of kept together as their own kind of clique. One of the characters from there who went by Elite when he was in the Hero High book is now the new Raven in the upcoming in Atlas of Earth Prime and in Freedom City, where he's adopted with the blessings of Callie Summers, the previous Raven. He's taken on the mantle and is now sort of the young up and coming hero of New York City, operating out of his own headquarters and doing his own thing. And characters like the current Bowman, who had graduated, one of our first characters to graduate from Claremont Academy, is now like this sort of elder statesman, hero who's in his sort of the prime of his adult heroic career with the Freedom League, shows up at Claremont for these sort of alumni inspire the young heroes of tomorrow, and these kids who are going to Claremont now are just like, you went to Claremont like in the dark ages, and you don't have any superpowers. Why are we listening to you? you're a guy with a bow. I mean, sure, you're in the Freedom League and that's cool, but
it's hard being a guy with a bow, no matter what
universe you're in. And now, Bowman finds himself in this position where he's like, oh, these punk kids. Like, but we address, and some, a few of the Hero High characters, things have not gone as well for. For example, catch up with Seven, who was the young witch and sorceress in the first iteration of the Next Gen, had a very tumultuous career. I suspect, from the outside perspective, that she experienced a number of relaunches in her, their efforts to give her a comic book. She basically went from being, sort of young trainee character to fledgling member of the Freedom League, which we saw in Emerald City and the Emerald City Knights adventure series. She eventually succeeds Eldritch as Master Mage of Earth Prime's dimension, and then very promptly after that experiences a significant setback where she inadvertently becomes the monarch of a dark dimension in another universe, and is kind of stuck there because she heroically overthrows the evil sorceress that rules this other dimension, not realizing that by doing so, she automatically inherits her title and her powers, and now is essentially the new omnipotent or near omnipotent overlord of this other universe, and now she has to figure out how to extract herself from that situation without actually destroying this whole other reality. Which can also coincidentally leaves Earth without a master mage. So, the mystical heroes of People's Mutants and Masterminds groups should start checking the want ads because there's going to be a great opportunity coming up so far as that goes.
That's got to be a hell of a job interview.
Right? Yeah. Well, that's the problem is, unfortunately, there's no one to give it. So, we kind of leave the question somewhat open-ended as to exactly how it is you get the job when there's no one to approve you for it.
And just like every time when the Dolphins fire their coach, there are plenty of bad people interested in the job too.
Right. Because it turns out if you have no scruples whatsoever, it comes with all kinds of perks. So,
can I ask about Megastar? Do we talk about Megastar yet?
What happened? I was actually super mean to Megastar. Megastar ends up extremely heartbroken, and does as Chris points out. Sometimes when you're young, you make those colossally bad decisions, he ends up making one of those. Because he's extremely heartbroken and kind of lost after he graduates, because Megastar goes from kind of being big man on campus to just another guy who graduated from Claremont, being a superhero is kind of all he really knows how to do. He ends up joining the Argents, who are the sort of intergalactic law enforcers that the artificial intelligence from Emerald City Knights creates in Cosmic Handbook. Then he's realized that he's basically become a sort of space fascist. For all intents and purposes, joined up with an organization that intends to impose order on the universe, whether the universe wants it or not, is kind of stuck with figuring out if he's going to try and justify his decision somehow or extract himself from it. And we kind of left him there as far as it being an interesting plot hook when characters get a chance to interact with him. Because right now he's sort of in the, I know I've made a horrible decision, but I'm going to try and justify it to myself anyway. And anyone who questions it is going to make me super angry because I know that they're totally right kind of phase of things.
That's the best place to have a character for a redemptive story arc.
Right, exactly.
The most fertile ground for conflict and drama.
Exactly. So it offers a great opportunity to use him as an antagonist who can be turned around if the heroes approach him in the right way, or they could end up pushing him into being a real villain.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty interesting development. Okay, so we'll be looking forward to this book, Hero High, coming out very soon. Like we say, sometime before August, the pre-order page that we were talking about earlier should be functional. So,
and we should hasten to add, Dr. Manhattan is responsible for none of this.
Yes, so far as everyone knows. I mean, what happens, 5 years from now? All will be revealed in third edition of Hero High.
The nice thing about role-playing games is someone can bring out the old Mayfail Watchmen game and smash it in with the Mutants and Masterminds.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Dr. Manhattan is behind Megastall's tone to space fascist cop.
Yep.
Well, just like people using Mutants and Masterminds books to hit other people, we can't sanction that use of our game. We just sell them, and after that, it's
out of your hands.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right. What you do in the privacy of your own game table is your business.
Yeah.
But I've always loved the one of the things about RPGs is that you can, mix and match all your favorite imaginative stuff to your heart's delight and, take all of the various, tropes and characters and concepts from all your favorite stories and play around with them and do them however you want.
Yeah, I was just thinking it's a bummer. Well, maybe it's not a bummer, but I was thinking, you guys did the DC Adventures book and, its follow-ups. We could have had the Watchmen in there, which would include Dr. Manhattan, but maybe someday.
It's funny, and Steve can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but to my memory, we weren't allowed to do anything that wasn't like straight DC Universe. I know we asked about a couple things,
yeah.
And it's so funny, if we were doing it today, top of their list would be, you got to do the Watchmen.
Probably.
Yeah.
I kind of love the Mutants and Mastermind DC Universe books for being that picture of the DC Universe that's closest to my heart.
Thank you.
I got those books right when they came out, right before like New 52 hit.
Yep.
And then New 52 hit, so I had something in my life that was classically labeled DC to play with.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
It's funny to think that DC Adventures might have been the version of the DC universe that was truest to what everyone thinks of as being DC during some of those years.
Well, we tried to make it as sort of timelessly iconic as we could, for a lot of things, obviously it has to be some amount of context, but we tried to provide as broad a view of a lot of things. Oftentimes it was a challenge because our writing staff on those books were such enthusiastic fans of the material that, occasionally we had to be like, no, like less, less, like salient details, like really like hit the highlights. You've got, 1,200 words to do this, brief, because people would, want to, provide like, all of the, like the complete overview of the character's career, which, when you're talking about like Batman was a little excessive. We were like, do their origin story and then stop. Like, don't discuss anything that's happened for the last like 70 years after that.
Yeah, and you don't need Jewel Kryptonite to have a giant write up.
But to give credit where credit is certainly due, as somebody who just seemed to wind up getting all the weird Silver Age villains, they were the people who edited that book, which is primarily John. We should give a shout out to John while we're talking about
Indeed.
This. It was so wonderful about the stuff that he did include. Like I wound up doing like the Flash villains that were so obscure they all got lumped into one entry. So I found out that on my list was the Top.
Yep.
And I went back and reread every single Top story going back to like 1959 and statted up every single trick Top that he used. Mm-hmm. And I think John out of like 25 of them, John I think cut two.
Now, is it true he had a psychic called the Power Bottom, or is that something I misremember?
Oh, working blue, huh? We're going to get naughty, huh?
Sorry. I got to earn that explicit tag on the podcast every once in a while. So, all right, moving on. Sure. Moving on. Hey, Steve, Icon's Adversaries came out just last month. It's been a big hit. Can you tell us about that?
Adversaries is basically just what it says on the tin. It's a big book of villains for Icons. Or adversaries, you know, because not all characters are, you know, irredeemably villainous. It's a collection of character write-ups. Some of them are updates of previous Icons characters to the assembled edition version of the rules to just make sure their write-ups were updated and polished and, you know, whatnot. Some of them are completely new characters I came up with. I have a long-running file I keep of just, like, lengthy, you know, like, random superhero name ideas where the name or theme of a character will pop into mind and I'll jot it down. And I just went through and culled out, you know, a couple of dozen of my favorites from that and wrote them up for Icons. So it's about 80 some, almost 90 characters altogether. It's a pretty wide range of, you know, different types of characters and power levels and themes that game masters can, you know, when they need to throw together a group of villains or pick out a particular villain for an adventure, you know, they've got just a ton of usable ideas because all the characters have adventure hooks and potential adventures to run with. And so they provide a lot of good worked examples of, you know, how characters look, basically.
May I say how much I love Sock Puppet?
You absolutely may. Sock Puppet is one of my favorite characters.
So I just got the book yesterday, just came in the mail, and I was picking through, and I came across Sock Puppet, and I stopped. I'm like, oh my god, it's a Condiment King clone. Like, it's within, like, I can see him teaming up with the Condiment King to make Batman's life a living hell for 2 minutes.
Yep. Sock Puppet is he's one of those. I mean, he's such an absurd character on many levels. Yet, I mean, especially considering that, you know, his, you know, costume looks like a giant, like he's wearing a giant sock with a hole cut in it for his face. You know, but the really funny thing about the character is, you know, he's based on the. You know, basically the archetype, as the name implies, you know, the archetype of this sort of internet troll who's, you know, just incapable of letting go of anything. In fact, I think unable to let go is one of his qualities. You know, but the fascinating thing about him, and he is a lot of characters, Icons embraces the very sort of, you know, campy Silver Age sort of style. So lots of characters in the book would not be at all out of place on the, you know, original Batman television series. But the fascinating thing about Sock Puppet is that with just a very, very slight twist, he's an incredibly creepy and sinister character.
Yeah, you can see the Grant Morrison twist.
Because, right, exactly. It, all he had to be is in the hands of the right writer. And all of a sudden he's Kilgrave from Jessica Jones, and he's like this horrible mind controlling stalker. And so, you know, it's fascinating to look at some of the, you know, underneath the sort of colorful surface of some of the characters and being like, wow, like this concept is really kind of horrible when you think about it.
Well, hey, moving on to the next, sounds like after, well, hang on, let me let you explain it. What's the next thing coming out for Icons after Adversaries?
So after Adversaries is finishing up Dan Houser, who I should give a shout out for. He is the line artist for Icons and did obviously a fantastic job with all of the character art for Adversaries. It's got some of Dan's best stuff in that book, and I made like all sorts of weird demands of him, you know, on that book where I was like, Dan, I want you to draw me a giant drag queen, you know, things like that. And so Dan has been doing a series of Icons adventures called Rise of the Phalanx that basically takes a group of novice superheroes from basically their origin, getting together as a group through a series of adventures involving the investigation of the fate of a previous hero team that has disappeared, and that these characters are slowly, you know, sort of rising to replace in the world. Dan is finishing the last adventure in that series, which we're going to release as a PDF adventure. And then once that is done and out, we're going to collect all of the Rise of the Phalanx adventures, I'm going to, you know, do some sprucing up of the design and layout and the like to pull them all together into a single product with each adventure basically as a big chapter. We're going to release that as a combined book. So it'll be sort of the first, you know, campaign adventure for Icons, where you'll have quite a lot of gameplay in one book. It'll be, you know, a big epic-sized adventure that you could easily, you know, just run a whole series based on.
Almost like an adventure path.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. We'll do for that compiled edition, we'll do print-on-demand editions like we did for Adversaries and for A to Z before that. Where people can, you know, get a nice printed book to run the game out of.
Okay, excellent. And just a few more things to wrap up. We wanted to touch on what you pre-show referred to as the trifecta of things coming out. So we got Freedom City for Third Ed, Hero High for Third Ed, and the Atlas of Earth Prime. I'm guessing the compiled edition.
Right.
All coming out here in the near future.
Basically, after Hero High, we've got Atlas of Earth Prime, which is going to be the compiled edition of the PDF series that we ran, that was looking at all of the various different regions of the world outside of Freedom City and Emerald City. That's going to be a substantial book, and it is, we did a big index of all of the characters in the book, and it is packed with characters. There are literally hundreds of characters in the book. It's a tremendous resource, both in terms of just sort of a bigger global view of things, and just having a ton of useful characters from all over the world, heroes and villains, that game masters can use in their games. And then from there, we're kind of going back to our roots and looking at the current state of things in Freedom City, and doing a new edition of that, very much in the style and format of the Emerald City source book, that provides an overview of the city and current events, and updates all of the second edition characters for Mutants and Masterminds Third. Unlike Emerald City, instead of having a big adventure path in the back, it's just full of characters because we had so many characters to update. It's just a giant book three, because it's divided into a player section, a game master section, and then book three is just heroes and villains, and a lot of them. As far as that goes. So it's going to be another jam-packed book. And those will really round out the Earth Prime setting with Emerald City, Cosmic Handbook, Hero High, Atlas, and Freedom City. You have like a whole vast universe to play with just a vast amount of resources and characters and adventure hooks and ideas and stuff like that.
All right, well, cool. I almost hate to ask, but do you ever see yourself leaving the Freedom Cityverse? Because, I mean, you've developed it in depth, you know, in several different angles.
Mm-hmm. We're actually talking about that. And, you know, because honestly, after at this point, there isn't a lot more to explore, you know, without getting into, you know, like really niche sort of stuff. And it might be worthwhile to start looking elsewhere for other worlds and settings and things to play around with for Mutants and Masterminds, because the Earth Prime setting is so developed. And we've been talking about that possibility. I think that that would be kind of fun, and a great opportunity to show the sort of range of Mutants and Masterminds as a system to tackle some other things. But no definite plans yet, but we are talking about it.
Sounds like maybe that's a summit discussion.
Chances are. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And we wanted to mention, talking about Mutants and Masterminds stuff, Rogues Gallery, which yes. I think is largely written and overseen by Mr. McLaughlin here, along with some other guest authors. And that's still coming out regularly, yes?
As convention season art and layout will allow. And so, yes. And we've already gotten an art on my next villain. I'm not sure if I'm the next in the queue or not, But hopefully soon you guys will see my update on a classic first edition villain from the very first annual. Oh my God, was that really 12 years ago?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, but I got to update a classic Keith Baker villain, Esquire, because there's just something about a rich guy acting like a total douchebag that kind of speaks to 2016, even maybe more so than it did in 2004.
What exactly do you mean, Chris?
Nothing at all. I'm just saying, you know, somewhere out there, there's probably a rich guy acting like a douchebag. I haven't heard anything about it. It's particular, but, but that thought was definitely riding shotgun as I was working on that one.
Why are you so mean to Warren Buffett? What did he ever do to you?
Tries to offer some financial advice.
He cut me off in line one day. It was whole.
That's the next one I have coming out, and of course there are some absolutely fabulous other people working on it. Aid Smith has chipped in, our old buddy, and hundreds of people I'm forgetting. Alex Thomas, how could I forget? Oh gosh, yeah, and so yeah. And
I've been enjoying some of Crystal Fraser's characters too.
You know, Aid was supposed to be here today, but he didn't ping me before the podcast, so I didn't send him. I hope he hasn't been listening to us just seething in anger this whole time.
Well, I think Deadpool opened up in the UK today, so it just, you know.
Been distracted.
Callback, the highest form of comedy, ladies and gentlemen. If you listen to previous podcasts, you know that Aid hates Deadpool with the fury of 1,000 suns. So. All right, well, hey, guys, we need to wrap things up. I actually have a meeting in about 2 minutes. Anything else you want to touch on real fast before we hit the close button?
Looking forward to convention season. We've got a lot of stuff coming up, and you know, we've got a ton of games we're running at Gen Con, so I'm really looking forward to that. That should be okay. Fun.
Mutants and Masterminds, Icon, something else?
All kinds of stuff. All, you know, Green Ronin stuff across the board, pretty much. We've got all kinds of games going. Thanks to Donna Pryor, our community coordinator, has really been helping us get a lot more games on the schedule than we've had the time or energy to do in previous years. So it's been really great.
Big shout to Donna. Jim, anything from you?
No, just going to keep plugging away at what I'm doing.
All right, cool. And Mr. McLaughlin, any parting thoughts?
Oh, just always a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, appreciate all you guys showing up. And to our listeners, thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.